This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Doge locked out.
The federal judge is temporarily restricting the access that Elon Musk's team has to Treasury Department data and payment systems, saying that this could cause irreparable harm and that it could also increase the likelihood of hacks and leaks.
ABC Selena Wang and a federal judge blocking the Trump administration's plan to put thousands of workers at USAID on leave and reinstating hundreds who've already been removed. The bodies of those on a passenger plane that went missing in Alaska now found on sea ice, along with the wreckage of the plane about 34 miles southeast of Nome, where it was supposed to land. All 10 people on board died. In Tel Aviv, 56-year-old Ohad Ben-Ami. That's the sound of him returning with his family. They were happy at a hospital, part of the latest hostage exchange. One of three released by Hamas. As part of the deal, Israel releasing 183 Palestinian prisoners. This is ABC News. The decades-long wait for the release of the government's secret files on the assassination of President John F. Kennedy could be nearing an end, with word that the plan to make the documents public has been delivered to the White House.
The Office of the Director of National Intelligence confirms a plan to declassify the documents has been sent to the White House by the deadline the president set. But it remains unclear how soon the public will actually be able to see the unredacted papers. For years, the CIA and other agencies have warned of harm to sources, methods, and continuing covert operations if the JFK secrets are revealed. Author Jefferson Morley founded JFKfacts.org.
They face harder choices than Trump knew when he made this breezy proclamation.
Stephen Portnoy, ABC News, Washington.
Tiger Woods going to play in the Genesis Invitational. It begins 9 days after the death of his mother. The first start since having back surgery in September. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Every story matters, and the Civic Media Radio Network is celebrating Black History Month by honoring the powerful stories of Wisconsin's own trailblazers. Meet Venus Robertson, the Green Bay woman, shares why Black History Month is special for her.
You need to be proud of your history.
For me, it just means a bunch of possibilities. Looking at the road that was laid before me, opportunities that were put out for me, things people went through to make sure that I have a chance.
Her story includes dressing up as a different person every day. It's a way to teach kids at the Boys and Girls Club about the richness of Black culture.
Tradition here, well, Black History Month, Miss Venus is going to dress up every single day. I really wanted to see, like, you can be anything you want to be. That is my heart. I want to be a role model for the kids here.
Venus is sharing history while shaping the future. Listen for more inspiring stories all month long. I'm Terry Barr.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. February is American Heart Month, and families are sharing their experiences with congenital heart defects at a time when what little research funding exists may get cut. Mike Moen reports.
Studies show CHDs are the most common birth defect in the U.S., affecting nearly 40,000 babies each year. The American Heart Association says thanks to progress in the world of research and treatments, outcomes have improved. But families still find themselves in delicate situations. Stephanie Johnson is a Minnesota mom whose son Henry was born with a syndrome restricting oxygen supplies to the body.
We also know that the honeymoon period doesn't last forever. And at some point, his heart's going to get tired, and he'll be looking at likely a heart transplant at that point.
Johnson hopes for additional medical breakthroughs, but she and health experts note congenital heart defect research is grossly underfunded. Another complication is government spending cuts sought by the Trump administration and the potential impact on agencies such as the National Institutes of Health. Policy experts say this research arm has already been dealing with flat funding levels. In the absence of government support, current research heavily relies on awareness campaigns involving families navigating these health scares.
We need to move science forward, and creating awareness for this is just incredibly important because awareness leads to funding, and funding leads to hope, and we're hoping for a cure.
Studies indicate that congenital heart defects are underdiagnosed because milder symptoms aren't always caught at birth. That means the disease is detected later in childhood or when the person becomes an adult. This is Mike Moen for Minnesota News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Gradual clearing for tonight, a low of 5 to 10. Sunshine returns for tomorrow, a high to the mid-20s, and warming to the upper 20s with more sun on Monday. Some flurries and snow showers Monday night. It's 28 degrees right now.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. We'll review the Super Bowl, see who won, who lost, and what the commercials were, the news headlines, and more. Join us then.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin.
For all of Wisconsin.
Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome in to Hour 2 of the Civic Media Spotlight. Earl Ingram is up first, and this week on The Earl Ingram Show, he welcomed on Reggie Jackson, nationally renowned scholar and journalist, for a conversation about race in the United States.
All right, welcome back to The Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. And it is at once a privilege and an honor for me to bring before you a man well-learned and well-known for what he has been able to do with his life. And more than all those things, a good friend, a dear friend, none other than Mr. Reggie Jackson. Good morning to you, Reggie. How you doing, man?
I'm great, Earl. Thank you. Appreciate being on the show.
Because we've done this over the years, but since I've been here, it's the first time that I've had an opportunity to have you on. But I got to do this before we get into it. Reggie Jackson is an award-winning journalist, speaker, researcher, and writer with deep, comprehensive knowledge of how our country's racial hierarchy developed historically and its impact on our lives today. Reggie is a graduate of Concordia University, co-founder of Nurturing Diversity Partners, and head griot of America's Black Holocaust Museum. He received the 2015 Eliminating Racism Award from Southeastern Wisconsin, YWCA 2016 Courageous Love Award from the First Unitarian Society, the 2017 Frank P. Zeiler Public Service Award from the City of Milwaukee, the first ever Mike of Milwaukee Inner City Congregations Ally for Hope Legacy Award in 2018, and on and on and on. In May 2018, he was appointed as but he's also an editor for the Milwaukee Independent. So he's a journalist. He's all of those things. But in May 2018, he was appointed as a member of the Milwaukee Equal Rights Commission by then Mayor Tom Barrett and Milwaukee Common Council. For over a decade, Reggie has been a much sought after speaker and presenter at churches, libraries, businesses, colleges, and universities around the country. Reggie served in the U.S. Navy for 6 years, including 4 years aboard the USS Missouri. From 2018 to 2010, he taught contemporary social problems and introduction to sociological as an adjunct professor at Concordia's Mequon campus. You also was, and you've been an educator. You've been a whole lot of different things. So you don't come to the table as a novice. You come to the table as a professional. And I just wanted to make sure that people were aware. And I certainly the accolades that you have received far outstripe the things that I just mentioned. I had to cut it short. But, Reggie, I asked you to come on today. It's Black History Month. You've traveled the state of Wisconsin in areas where there are no black people and had dialogue with whites across this state. Let's talk a little bit about the way you see things today, man.
Okay, yeah, great. Thanks, Earl. And, you know, I was also a public school teacher for 8 years. It's part of my, you know, life journey. As I started to begin to get requests to talk about, you know, things related to African-American history and race and racism, things of that nature, and was invited to all these communities around the state, I had the opportunity for the first time in my life to travel to parts of the state that I had never been to before. So I've been to over 50 communities around the state of Wisconsin, including Wausau, Green Bay, La Crosse, Platteville, Burlington, Janesville. I mean, so many different places. I can't remember the names of all of them, but from the north to south, the east and the west of Wisconsin, I've seen parts of the state that I've never imagined seeing before. And I've gone to those places multiple times because people like the message that I send, and they think it's credible information, and they invite me to come back multiple times. And it's been one of the greatest joys in my life to be able to kind of see the state that, you know, I moved to as a child in 1973 in a way that I'd never seen it before. And it's been a great journey, and I've appreciated, you know, all of those folks that I work with in all those different communities engaging in conversations about really important things to them.
So
things that, you know, these people don't know much about the African-American experience, and so they asked me to come and, you know, share some of that with them.
So you always talk about misinformation. Not so much education, but misinformation. What are we talking about?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that I tell people, Earl, I learned this many, many years ago, probably over two decades ago. I heard this African proverb that I'd never heard before. And it says, until the lion tells his story, the story of the hunt will always glorify the hunter. And what that simply means is that, you know, typically marginalized people never get to tell their version of the story. Because the story is always told by someone else. And so what that, you know, told me was that there's always more than one version of every story. There's different perspectives. And so I think people have gotten a lot of information from sources that I don't think are credible sources. You can't talk about, you know, anything about the history of women, the experiences of women, without talking to women, Earl. You have to talk to women if you want to learn anything about the experience of women, and people from marginalized communities have to have a voice if you want to learn some reality, some truth about how they see the world. And it's really just about perspectives, Earl. You know, everybody has a perspective based on their lived experiences. For instance, for me, you know, I was born in a little town in Mississippi and moved to Milwaukee when I was seven back in 1973. And so I've lived in a lot of different spaces in my life. And I've learned a lot along the way. I spent 6 years in the Navy, traveling around the world and understanding that, you know, people in different countries see the United States differently than those of us who live in the United States see it. So it's really about, where do you get your information from? Is it a credible source? And I think there's so much just incredible information that is missed by people because they don't know where to find credible sources or information. And it's replaced by misinformation. You know, a lot of people depend on social media for, you know, to learn American history. And I say that, you know, social media can be used as a tool, you know, to great effect positively, but by the same token, it can be used in a negative way as well. And so people get a lot of bad information depending on social media instead of going to credible resources to learn about things. It's incredibly difficult to know the difference. If you haven't been exposed to these things, you don't know what's credible and what's not credible. You just think, well, it's on the internet. You know, it must be true, is what I hear people say. And it's like, no, that's not necessarily the way it is. And so people oftentimes will give you information to support their way of seeing the world, because they want to maintain the status quo. They want to maintain, you know, life as it's always been for them. So when I hear people say stuff like, you know, make America great again, first of all, I tell people that that slogan was not created by the current president and his team. That slogan was actually stolen from Ronald Reagan when he ran for president in 1980. That was his slogan, make America great again. That's where the slogan comes from, the Reagan campaign in 1980. And so, you know, we have to understand that we have to reach outside of our normal sphere of information to get different information. And there is so much incredibly rich information available to people. If you know where to go, if you understand how to do proper research, you can find the credible information. But people aren't taught in our schools how to be researchers, how to even be really critical thinkers. We don't think about critical thinkers. And when I was a teacher, I used to tell my students all the time, listen, you have to question everything. Don't just take my word for it. Don't just take the word of, you know, the author of the textbook. Do further research. Get confirmation of things in order to believe them. Get confirmation.
So if you're just joining us, I'm joined by Mr. Reggie Jackson. He's an award-winning journalist, speaker, researcher, renowned historian who's been in demand across this nation and especially the state of Wisconsin. But he's a good friend, and I have him on. And he'll be on several times this month. So I'll let you know what dates, because we're going to cover a lot of different territory. Reggie, your thoughts about where we are today with race in this nation?
Well, Earl, I think that we're certainly moving in the wrong direction when it comes to race relations in the United States. You know, for many, many years, we thought as a nation, we were told that, you know, we were moving into what people refer to as a post-racial America, where, you know, where race would not be important moving forward. But what we didn't know is at the same time we were saying we were post-racial America, that race still plays an incredibly important role in the way that we see ourselves and the way we see other people in our society. It's not something that, you know, we've gotten past just because of the civil rights movement. The civil rights movement did not fix America's race problem. It was not designed to fix America's race problem. And so where we are now, we're moving in the opposite direction where we're erasing some of that history, literally erasing some of that history by denying people the opportunity to hear other voices, you know, other perspectives. And that does not bode well for the future of this country.
Do you think that there'll ever be a time that race won't be a factor in this nation? Is it predicated on something that's learned, or what is the reason that people can't get beyond race as an issue?
Well, Earl, the idea of race is part of the basic fabric of this nation and how we've interacted with each other over hundreds of years. It's not something that just disappears. You know, I tell people all the time that biologically, race is not a concept. It's a social construct, but it's become so embedded in the way that we see things that I don't think it'll ever go away.
855-752-4842 is the number. I am joined by the one and only Reggie Jackson. Again, a griot, a historian, an educator, a guy who's so well known across this state and across this nation for his eloquence and his knowledge of race and the history of things. 855-752-4842. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Simply call me sweet where I hello,
mother, mother. The Earl Ingram Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 8 till 10. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. News from the Center, WRCE.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
There are solutions to the rot in the Supreme Court, and it's a congressional binding code of ethics. There are solutions to the corruption. It's a constitutional amendment to declare that money isn't speech and corporations aren't people, and we can do this. These are things that Americans agree on no matter our party. We all know that presidents aren't kings.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. The Grammys were the past weekend, and this week on the Maggie Dawn Show, Maggie reflected on Beyoncé's big win for Album of the Year with Cowboy Carter. Being only the fourth black woman to receive the award, Maggie remembers the three women who won it before her.
Welcome back. Welcome, everybody, if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Where I'll talk about, you know, pretty much anything, especially if you've got a question about it. And we now have a very special segment here on The Maggie Dawn Show. Each week on Fridays, starting this Friday at 3 p.m., we're doing a new segment called Ask Maggie. And she really... maybe we'll call it Ask Maggie Anything, because you really can ask me anything. If you want to get those questions in ahead of Friday, please email them to askmaggie@civicmedia.us. It is your opportunity to put your questions directly to me. Try to make sure the questions are on point, but they don't have to be specifically about the news of the week. They can be deeper dives. What's my hot take on why people become, you know, criminal defense attorneys? A question I get asked often at bars and when I'm out and about. Anything and everything is welcome about any and every topic. That's what I think is going to be super fun about it. And for those of you who sometimes think, Maggie, would you just take a wee bit of a breath? I've been listening to you flap your gums for far too long. Here's the fun part about the Ask Maggie segment. I only get 90 seconds to answer your question. So I'll have plenty of time for plenty of questions. And there's a timer running, so I have to shut the heck up after those 90 seconds. Again, you got questions about anything that you'd like me to address. Again, make sure the questions are in good faith. It can be about the news of the week or some deeper issue that you've had, you know, gurgling up in your subconscious. Just email askmaggie@civicmedia.us and I'll be happy to take your question up. One of the reasons I mention that is that on the show, as a lawyer and an economist and someone who's worked in government for a long, long time, yeah, I talk about politics a lot on the show, but I also love to talk about sports. I'm a huge baseball fan. I used to play rugby when I was in college. I'm an old has-been athlete, but I love music and pop culture and all that kind of fun stuff. So today, as I often do, I'm mixing in a little bit of the pop culture with our politics. Don't worry, everybody. I will get to the political. But yesterday, some history was finally made by Beyoncé winning the Grammy Album of the Year award, long overdue. In case you have been keeping track, everyone, she is only the fourth black woman to ever win Album of the Year, which I think is an utter abomination. Thinking about all of the contributions of black women in basically every single genre of music in the United States. Really, without black women, Americana music, all American music types, isn't going to be anywhere near as diverse, deep, complicated, or where it is today without those contributions. And yet, so rarely acknowledged by the Academy's Board of Voters, except for these very handfuls, very few times. So to refresh our collective recollections, and the interesting thing here is that all of these awards, all of these prior Album of the Year awardees that were Black women, I have been alive for and seen them get this Grammy for Album of the Year. And the first one went to Natalie Cole many, many moons ago in 1992. Think about how long it took. The very first Grammy ceremony was in 1959, and it took until 1992 before a Black woman took down Album of the Year. That was her tribute album to her father. I remember it well. It is a beautiful album. The next Album of the Year went to Whitney Houston. No surprise there. I mean, how could anybody be cool with Whitney not getting eventually an Album of the Year? Now, she only won once. We can leave that for a debate topic for another day. And then the most recent one, the one that we have been in a long, long drought awaiting the return of a Black woman to the top of the Grammy podium, was Miss Lauryn Hill for an album which I still think is probably one of the best albums recorded of all time. She only did this once. She was a member of the Fugees. She released one solo album, and that was it. It was called The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. She won Best Album in 1999. So just to refresh your recollection, the 90s, you know, one of my favorite generations or decades. It might be because I was a youngin' back in the 90s, and that was when I was having all my fun. We had 92 Natalie Cole, 94 Whitney Houston, and then Lauryn Hill in 99. Both, all three indisputably major albums of just, I think, once in a generation, except we got three of them in the 90s sort of quality. So it has been a very, very long time. Now, if you've been keeping track on your Beyoncé scorecard, she's won basically every other Grammy category except for Best Country Album, which she also won this year, a notoriously hard category to crack. And she has been nominated for Album of the Year not once, not twice, not three times, not four times, but this was her fifth nomination for Album of the Year. It's pretty incredible. She was first nominated 15 years ago for I Am Sasha Fierce. She is now on her third album of a basically artistic tear from Beyoncé, going back through Renaissance and Lemonade. We're expecting yet another, her third act in these visual albums coming up soon. She's hinted about an album drop coming up in the spring. It was an impressive and important moment for Beyoncé and finally ending the drought. I think there would have been a great amount of backlash had she not won. And I also think the universal acclaim, the respect of fellow artists for Beyoncé, you could see it because they panned after she was announced to the other nominees, including Taylor Swift and Billie Eilish. And Billie had tears in her eyes. And Taylor Swift was cheers and Jay-Z, which I was like, yeah, when your competition celebrates your win, pretty amazing. We're going to take care of some business. We're going to be right back. I'm going to give you the other bits of joy from that amazing ceremony last night at the Grammys in Los Angeles. You're not going to want to miss my take. We're going to move on to the tariffs then. How much will they cost you and your family? All coming up next right here on The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm going to stand by him. He's going to stand by me. I'm going to stand by her. She's going to stand by me. I'm going to stand by him. He's going to stand by me.
The Maggie Dawn Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 2 until 4. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
ABC ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Doge locked out.
A federal judge is temporarily restricting the access that Elon Musk's team has to Treasury Department data and payment systems, saying that this could cause irreparable harm and that it could also increase the likelihood of hacks and leaks.
ABC Selena Wang and a federal judge blocking the Trump administration's plan to put thousands of workers at USAID on leave and reinstating hundreds who've already been removed. The bodies of those on a passenger plane that went missing in Alaska now found on sea ice, along with the wreckage of the plane about 34 miles southeast of Nome, where it was supposed to land. All 10 people on board died. In Tel Aviv, 56-year-old Ohad Ben-Ami. That's the sound of him returning with his family. They were happy at a hospital, part of the latest hostage exchange. One of three released by Hamas. As part of the deal, Israel releasing 183 Palestinian prisoners. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station.
Want to hear even more? Anytime?
Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Super Bowl Sunday tomorrow. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens reporting from Super Bowl 59 in New Orleans, where the Chiefs and the Eagles will kick off tomorrow night at 5:30. Running back Saquon Barkley had a phenomenal year for the Eagles, rushing for over 2,000 yards, and now is at his first Super Bowl. I asked him, how important is that the Eagles were here just 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think it's important for sure. Having guys like BG, Lane, Jalen, Smitty, all those guys that's played in the game, but I've been playing football since I was 7, 8 years old, you know. Obviously, it's just on a bigger stage and, you know, it's more eyes, but it's still Seth Hutt and you got to go run the ball.
NBA, the Bucks losing last night to the Hawks in Atlanta, 115-110. The Bucks blew a 73-55 lead at the half. Damian Lillard.
We talked about at halftime how we know they, especially at home, they always seem like they come back and get in the games. You know, they play free and we needed to just stay sharp.
That's the Bucks' Damian Lillard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Gradual clearing for tonight, a low of 5 to 10. Sunshine returns for tomorrow, a high to the mid-20s. And warming to the upper 20s with more sun on Monday. Some flurries and snow showers Monday night. It's 28 degrees right now.
No more mold, no more damage, no more slipping and hurting. Make your ordinary bathroom extraordinary for only $99 per month. New shower, new door, new tub, new wall, new anti-slip technology. BCI Bath and Shower is made in America for the highest quality. First 50 callers save $1,500 on a never-clear glass-treated door. BCI Bath and Shower, interest-free financing options. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Donald Trump is president again, and Democrats need to take a new approach to combat this presidency. Part of that is recognizing the realignment of how we arrived here. In last year's election, one thing Trump did successfully was turn out people who might not otherwise vote. In Wisconsin, he increased his vote share in all 72 counties en route to the largest popular vote total in state history. How did he do this? Well, as I see it, there are two factions of Republicans. One is the more traditional country club Republicans. The other is the newer group, what I'm calling the pro-wrestling Republicans. In my latest column, I wrote about how Donald Trump transformed the party by prioritizing the pro-wrestling Republicans, and why recognizing this new reality is critical to Democrats' ability to grab a steel chair of their own and fight back. Subscribe and read it now at the Recombobulation Area.
Matt Nair on air.
Dan Schaefer, Civic Media's political editor.
No court in the country came closer to overturning the 2020 election results than the conservative majority on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And we have Brad Schimmel, who's been siding with January 6 rioters. So if you want your vote to count going forward, show up and vote on April 1st. Let's channel that energy into the Wisconsin Supreme Court race.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Max Inc. has a super show this weekend. Join us as we welcome The Flavor That Kills, Rob Dees and the Steepwater Band. Plus, we'll talk weather with Rippyology. Saturday and Sunday evening at 6, it's Max Inc. on Civic Media. We are local music.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
We return now to the Civic Media Spotlight. Dom Salvia is up next, and this week on the Dom Salvia Show, he welcomed on Harvey Kaye, Professor Emeritus of Democracy and Justice Studies at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, a recurring guest and our favorite Delano Democrat. With so much division currently in American politics, he encourages us to look at history, to wrestle with contradictions, find pride in our progressive accomplishments, and resist the temptation to paint our past as either all good or all bad.
And welcome back to the Dominic Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-757. Having a little fun today, our pal Harvey Kaye, Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, joining me to the top of the hour. You can do so as well. Harvey, before we get on to how you're feeling these days, man, a little concerned about you from the text. Annie had called in concerned about what she saw on the Social Security Administration website, ssa.gov. And I looked at him like I was looking for like a Confederate flag or something like that, and I did not see that. But she had sent some images to us, and I've looked a little further, a little closer at the ssa.gov website. And in the upper left of the website, there is the American flag. However, that American flag on the upper left of the ssa.gov website has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 stars. 9 stars. I'm like, well, what does that mean? So I did another Google search, and one could assume that perhaps those 9 stars symbolize the first 9 states to secede from the Union at the beginning of the Civil War. Annie from Watertown. Yeah, I see it. I see what you're saying. There's only 9 stars. That seems strange.
Why change that?
Right.
And the Social Security site?
SSA.gov, yes, has an American flag with 9 stars in it. That is correct. I can verify it. I took a picture of it. It's there as we speak. So thanks for the heads up. We'll let other folks perhaps ponder the relevance and meaning of that and how long that's been there. I like to see some pages from like last year see what that is. But in the meantime, Harvey Kaye, let's talk about how you're feeling, man. I'm a little concerned. I thought perhaps you told me that you were feeling a little dulled these days, man. What do you mean by that?
Well, let's start with the fact that for at least, I'm lost track of time. How long has he been president now? Yeah, 2 weeks?
This is our third week. We're in our third week. Third week. Yeah.
I mean, look, I fully confess that my head's been spinning. I mean, we're bouncing back and forth trying to keep up with all of this stuff, which is happening moment to moment. In fact, I forget what it was I saw during the break of breaking news. Okay. Oh, I saw the breaking news. They're looking into breaking up the education department. Okay. I mean, so we'll see what happens by tomorrow morning.
Yeah. I actually got a hint that we were expecting an executive order to end the Federal Department of Education today.
All right.
Actually, so I saw that version too. So, you know, I was trying to be less scary in my report. I mean, so all of this is just, it's gotten to the point of sort of dulling me. Now, when I say dulling me, I mean, my anger is deep inside of me, but my anger is not, I go through this, I've said this for years. Republicans acted like I expected post-Reagan Republicans to act. Trump is acting like I really expect Trump and his cohort to act. Especially given that I never expected Musk to have the role in standing alongside of government that he has, practically inside of the White House. I mean, all those truly perverse images that people produce for Twitter about their relationship, Trump and Musk. I mean, those are the kind, look. But with all that, I mean, so there's a deep anger, but I'm dull in my sense of what do we do? People say, what do we do now? And I said, well, there's not the best thing is, and I'm getting reports around the country, it is happening, is that at the local level, in cities like Chicago, that's where I got the major report from a former student, there is activity on the ground to protect people, to try to maneuver around the orders, okay, to read the orders carefully to see how they might be interpreted at the ground level differently. Mm-hmm. You know, in the Spanish Empire, for the several centuries of the Spanish Empire, there was something that the viceroys in Latin America could say to, publicly, which would license them, viceroys being the sub-kings of who represented the king. They could say, obedesco pero no cumplo. I obey, but I do not comply. And it struck me that it may well be that our best hope is to find federal officials who are willing to start sounding like Spanish Empire viceroys. I mean, it's really the case where you don't know what's coming next. You don't even, and you have, I just hope somebody's keeping a list. So if we ever get back into office with a reasonable government, they can start undoing all of this mess. But so I don't know what one does overnight or what one does in the immediate sense. I can only leave that to people who are more directly engaged on the ground with these kinds of questions. But what's been on my mind that I've been telling you is something that I actually wrote about in 2016, almost immediately after Trump won in 2016. And that was, and the Democrats did nothing to address it. I published it at a major website. I was one of Bill Moyer's most important or most active writers back in the years that he had his television show and his website. And I said that it was imperative for progressives, and I've used this word on the cover book, to take hold of American history and to talk American history. That is, I'm not saying that they should be teaching as in a classroom. That's a history that really does need to stick to a more critical kind of, which Trump will outlaw eventually, I'm sure, a critical story so that students understand the contradictions of American history. But progressives had to stop, especially further to the left, my comrades on the left, number one, stop trashing the United States. That's essential. You stop trashing the United States. Okay, it's a knee-jerk reaction so that when the likes of Reagan and his cronies right through to the likes of Trump created a nostalgic image of the past that left out any sense of what the past was about, the immediate response on the part of the left, of which I am a part, was to trash the United States, okay? And it found its way in many ways, into the public realm in a way that did make the left and the entire, you know, sort of progressive end of the spectrum seem to be almost anti-American. The fact is that we had a better history to offer. Not a counter history, but a better history. The history that begins really inside of the American Revolution, okay, which for all of the, you know, contradictions of the revolution and for all the things it left undone, developed, projected, and made a promise that was inscribed first in the Declaration and then in the preamble to the Constitution and in many ways also in the Constitution if one goes deeply into it. And similarly, through the course of American history, it became what Abraham Lincoln turned to, what FDR turned to, what JFK, LBJ, in their best moments, all turned to. And that is to start recalling that promise, number one, promise of equality and life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's absolutely crucial. And then beyond that, to remember that in every generation in American history, there has been a movement, a struggle, on the part of Americans, both native born and newly arrived, to try to secure the promise. And in the struggles to secure that promise, history was made, okay? And the fact is that instead of countering with how awful the American history has been, which, yeah, I'm not denying the contradictions, I'm not denying right. The oppression, the exploitation, sure. And the tragedies. But the point is, we have to remind ourselves and remind our fellow citizens, number one, of the ways in which we achieved and brought an end to slavery, secured the women's right to vote. And it wasn't from the top down, it was from the bottom up. Now, doing that, Democrats, generically speaking, should be identifying them with the best of American history. Okay, but when's the last time you heard an American progressive, well, Democratic politician talk about history other than to throw out the term the soul of America, which, by the way, stop. I don't want to hear anyone talking about the soul of America. I want to hear about the struggle for America. Have you ever heard in recent times anyone, but maybe a conservative, try to hijack history to mention Thomas Paine? Has anyone talked about, who's talked about the likes of Lincoln or the likes of FDR? I mean, we haven't heard Democrats talk about that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So my point is that it's time for Democrats, especially the progressives among us, and no less those of us on the left to be promoting a historical memory, which basically offers a narrative and reminds people of what it takes to bring an end to that which we do find abhorrent. And so that's been on my mind. Now, I say that, and I've done my best. I've written about it, and I've produced a comic book about it, okay? But it is the case that the Democrats just don't do it. You didn't even hear anyone running for the Democratic chair or whatever the title is of that office in speaking in terms of what the Democratic Party at its best has been. Mm. So anyhow.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salve Show. That is Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin at Green Bay. Harvey, I love what you're saying, man. I truly do. And I wonder, you know, in the worst of times, in the times that as we would look back and talk about the oppression, the inequality and those kinds of things, and put it in that very similar framework, because the lack of pursuing our life and liberty and pursuit of happiness when we're not engaged, when we're not doing that, this is where we fail. These are the things that happen when we're not in that pursuit. I'm not talking about trashing this country. I'm saying when we don't recognize and appreciate and lift up the struggle and the basic understanding of the foundation of this country, which is, for me, we the people in pursuit of life, liberty, and our pursuit of happiness. When things go south, it seems those things are kind of thrown out the door, Harvey. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, the other thing is that that story that I wish we would be recounting and recounting and encouraging might itself encourage people to demand more and not necessarily to say, nothing we can do about it, okay? Or for that matter, to turn to the likes of the demagogues like Donald Trump. Well, the assumption is I can't do anything, so we need a guy like Donald Trump because he'll fight.
Right.
He'll fight. I mean, it's dangerous to lack the historical memory, which is the true story of the United States, the radical and progressive story of the United States.
Well, historical memory implies that it was known to begin with, Harvey, and I'm not clear that we could, you know, sit up here and artfully make that argument. I think for a lot of folks, putting it in that kind of context would be perhaps the first time they've heard it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. I'll go back to my man FDR, if you don't mind.
Yes.
He never failed to give a speech which didn't sort of conjure up the America's historical past in a progressive way. There were those who came to call him America's history teacher in chief because he was doing it so often. I mean, when he went before the American people, or went before Congress with a message, he always would grab hold of the past in order to, if you like, bolster his arguments about what he wanted to do in the New Deal. I mean, when he first was running for office in 1932, he talked about the original social contract, the Declaration of Independence, and how it had been usurped, or not usurped, it had been basically crushed, that social contract, by the industrial titans of the Gilded Age. I mean, there are ways of going about it so you don't sound like you're being a pedagogue,
right?
Okay, or pedantic is a better way of putting it, but that you're really sort of reaching deep in. And I do think Americans may not have the details in their minds, but they have a sense of the American story. And if it's not encouraged, if it's not cultivated, one can find the likes of Reagan and Trump trying to create an image of the past, which leaves out the story of the struggle, which makes it out as if God made it all happen.
And it is a struggle. That story needs to be told. And I'm very curious on as every generation has their struggle, what this generation is going to do. You know, if people decide to do nothing, which is a choice, to sit on their hands and let somebody else worry about it, well, then we get what we get. And in this case, it's Donald Trump. In other cases, it's been much worse for our American history. Folks, you're listening to the Dominic Salve Show, 855-752-4842. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, coming back for one final segment. And you know how we roll. It's the last segment of the day. You got to tell us something good. That means you, Harvey. That means you, Jess. That means you, callers, 855-75-CIVIC. Come back with us.
The Dom Salvia Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 4 till 6. To learn more about this show and all the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
News from the center, WRCE.
What's your go-to when the cold winds of winter blow? A heavy coat? A hat? For many of us, it's lip stuff, too. But did you know one of the most popular brands, Carmex, the one in the little yellow tube or tub, is a Wisconsin product? It's made in Franklin, a suburb of Milwaukee, and it's shipped to more than 60 countries every year. So can you guess the original use for Carmex? Fixing squeaky doors, actual lip balm, or to soften baseball gloves? The answer coming up. Alfred Woolwig created Carmex in the kitchen of his Dodge County home in Rubicon in 1937. He hand-poured thousands of jars until deciding to automate the manufacturing process in the 70s. Now, can you guess the original use for Carmex when it was created? More than 80 years ago. It's always been meant to be a lip balm, but people use it on other dry or itchy skin areas too. It remains a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Closing out the Civic Media Spotlight for this week, we'll hear from the Chad Holmes Show up in Wausau. Chad welcomed on Nancy Stensel, Democratic Party Chair of Marathon County, to discuss the first 2 weeks of what's become known as Trump 2.0. They also continue the discussion about Mayor Doug Dinney of Wausau, who last fall carted away the city's ballot drop box.
Welcome back, Chad Holmes Show, 98.9 WXCO. Very happy to welcome back across the table. Save me this morning, Nancy Stensel.
Thanks for having me on.
I wanted to get you on because I always love talking.
We got so much to talk about.
I know. Let's start locally because obviously, you know, we hear a lot about the national scene.
Mm-hmm.
I have found myself very annoyed.
I think we all are, and I think people are feeling pretty hopeless right now. And I don't want to keep, you know, when we talk with them or listen to them, I don't want to keep just regurgitating the same thing. We do need to move on, but we need some structure on what we're going to do, what's going to be effective. We can't keep doing the same old all the time and expecting something different.
The definition of insanity.
Yeah.
Well, let's start right there. Mm-hmm. You've had a little time now to kind of take stock of what happened in the last year. What worked, do you think? What didn't work?
Well, one, we lost. You know, let's just get past that. We had, I think, a wonderful candidate, a candidate that, considering she had a very short time to get it together, both Kamala and Tim Walz did a fabulous job of spreading hope and joy. And that's something we definitely need in this country. At the same time, there had to been some kind of a disconnect where people did not feel that they were being listened to. Now, I have a friend who's in the trades. And we were at an issue-based meeting. And this was right after the election. And I said, you know, I think maybe the poor people didn't feel that the poorer people didn't feel they were being listened to. And he turned around. And I mean, I trust this guy. And he turned around and looked at me. He goes, the poorer people? He said, I make damn good money. He said, and you're not listening to me. So, okay, where is the disconnect? And I think that's where we need to really start a conversation. People are discouraged right now. They're not sure what they should do. I keep telling people, you know, flood Rojo's voice boxes because he doesn't answer. you know, keep talking with Tom Tiffany, and we need to do a better job of staying on task, because it's like all of a sudden you find out he's going to be at a town hall today. Be that person to go there, and they don't want you there. That's why you're not finding out.
Right.
And so he can just preach to his little choir. But we need to stay really cognizant of these things. But keep writing them. Does it do any good? You know, people are telling me this too, that I want to write, but I'm not sure anybody on the other end is listening. Keep writing. Keep yelling.
Let me go back to what you said about the voters and not being listened to. How do we change that perception? Because is Donald Trump listening to them? Is Tom Tiffany listening to them? Is it just, maybe I'm completely off base, but it comes down to simple points, I think. Again, this idea that if these people that don't live the word of God say they love God, I think God, guns, gays still resonate, don't they?
It does. Anything you can do to get a base riled up, and they'll be sure to
How do you change that mentality, though?
That's a good question, and it's one I'm looking for answers to. I think a lot of it with this last race, we were overjoyed at Kamala because we are the strong Dems. But your average person, I'm thinking, felt she was an extension of Joe Biden, and a lot of people weren't happy with him for whatever reason. And Donald Trump maybe represented change. I mean, sometimes change is not a good thing. And, you know, be careful what you
wish
for.
Another C word is chaos.
Yeah. And I think they'll grab anything.
Is there a sense that too many people look at our political lives as entertainment?
Yeah. There's people like you and I that are totally enmeshed in this day in and day out, and we follow everything. But there are so many people that don't pay any attention at all, or they have just totally tuned out. I know I did some doors this last Saturday, and I had met a few people at the doors that they're happy to talk to somebody that they can identify with that will listen to them, a real person. And then there were some that looked at me and said, no, I wasn't aware there's a race coming up. And typically your spring elections tend to be kind of forgotten race, and it shouldn't be, because this affects you more than anything.
We got a primary in 2 weeks.
Yes.
And I shudder to think the number of people that are going to vote in it. Yeah. There's something wrong there.
There really is.
With our democracy.
There is. You are totally right.
And also, I think that part of it is the system where we should make these elections easier.
Yes, for people. We should.
We shouldn't be having another election right now, to be honest with you, in my opinion. It's too soon. Why are we having an election now? Why wasn't this on the ballot?
People haven't recovered from the last one. But yeah, your spring elections do tend to be a lot smaller, and it's really sad. Your election officials even tell you that. I went for training last week, and they said, you know, we'll only need half the amount of people because, you know, this typically nobody shows up for this race.
Be an hour, no one will walk in.
And, which is really sad, because there are, you know, like your county board, your city council, that's not on this one, but that's typically your spring elections. Those people are making more decisions of your day-to-day life than somebody in Washington is, even.
You're right. We're going to take a timeout for an information update, then come back with more with Nancy Stensel coming up. The time is 9:29 on 98.9 WXCO.
The Chad Holmes Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WXCO weekday mornings from 8 until 10. To learn more about you're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Maggie Dawn.
Do you know that Donald Trump's draconian policies are hurting children right here in Wisconsin? Dane County's Head Start program experiences outages. We discuss at 3 o'clock.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
Max Inc. on Civic Media, live in the lair with Kalen Cole.
Have you ever walked away from a karaoke performance thinking, yeah, that was a lot better than the original person?
Oh my gosh, I don't know if I should admit that or not.
I think you should. Because now there's a song.
Jimmy's talking on it now.
I know. Oh, you're going to get me in trouble, Jimmy.
It's live in the lair. Grab the podcast now at MaxIncRadio.com and listen live on Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. A third aviation incident in less than 2 weeks has federal safety investigators in the job. A crash that killed all 10 people on board was of a small plane south of Nome, Alaska.
This is on an ice floe, which is moving about 5 miles a day.
Jennifer Homendy, chair of the National Transportation Safety Board. Federal judges granting stops to some Trump administration efforts. The courts have barred Elon Musk, Mr. Trump's government efficiency chief, from access to the Treasury Department's private taxpayer information like Social Security numbers and bank account numbers. The administration's temporarily blocked from implementing its buyout offer for more than 2 million federal employees. The Trump team's plan to put thousands of workers at USAID, the foreign aid agency, on leave is blocked, reinstating hundreds who've already been removed. Because of bird flu, officials in New York City closing 7 live poultry markets. This is ABC News.